Thank you very much for inviting me at this wonderful conference. So I would like to talk about the following problem. So let me just define the object first. So you start with a synthetic manifold and omega. So this is a synthetic manifold. And you look at the group of all Hamiltonian diffeomorphisms. So inside the synthetic manifold, you take a Lagrangian submanifold. And so recall that a Lagrangian submanifold is a submanifold of half dimension. So this is of even dimension 2n. And this is a real manifold. So this is a differential manifold of dimension half the dimension of dimension n in m 2n. And it is a Lagrangian submanifold when the separate form restricted to the tangent spaces of L vanishes. So this is the Lagrangian submanifold, and then you consider the group of Hamiltonian diffeomorphisms. So this is a set of all phi that belong to the group of symmetric diffeomorphism of M. So this is the group simply of diffeomorphism of M that preserve the synthetic form. And then you have that phi be the fine one map of an isotopy phi t. Phi t that starts at the identity. And such that the infinitesimal area, so such that for any closed curve, alpha, say C closed curve in M, the infinitesimal area span by phi t acting on C is zero. Okay, so you have this isotopy phi t, and then you just look at the image of I phi t on any closed curve C, and you ask that at each time t, the area span by phi t acting on C be zero. So this can also the group of Hamiltonian diffeomorphisms can also be defined as the set of all flows in the synthetic group of M, which are generated by non-autonomous Hamiltonians. So this is a group. This is a group of Hamiltonian diffeomorphisms, and then you define a group. So now define the group. Define the subgroup, which M defined by ML. So ML of M. So this is by definition the set of all phi in M of M, such that phi of L is equal to L. So it means that phi preserves L. And then the problem that I will be talking about in this talk is the following. You take ML, and then you take the restriction to, so this is the restriction to L. L, which gives you a map of diff of L. So you take this map, and then so of course because phi preserves L, then of course you can restrict phi to L. You get the diff of L, and then the image. So the image of this map, the image I will call G, the group, the subgroup of diff of L, which is the image of this map, and this is a subgroup of diff of L. And it's a subgroup form of all diffeomorphisms of L that you can obtain as a fine one. So you start with L inside M, and then you act. So because ML is the endpoint of an isotopy, you have this isotopy starting at the identity. So you move L, and then at the time one you come back to L, and so. So you have, so I repeat, you have an Hamiltonian isotopy of L that comes back to L at time one. And the idea is to see, so then you get a monodromy. This of L is a monodromy of L. It's a monodromy of the monodromy of the problem. And then the question is to characterize or to compute the group of the monodromy group of L. So this is called the monodromy group of L. Okay, so so now this is the monodromy, and then actually I wish to study the homological version of this monodromy. So the homological monodromy of L, which is by definition the image of this by the map that's assigned to its diffeomorphism of H star of L. So of course, to each diffeomorphism of L, I can just have this I can just take G star. That acts on the homology of L with any coefficient ring. And then the idea is to characterize the image of this composition of these two morphisms. Okay, so the group G, the groups G and G star are invariants. Attach to the Hamiltonian isotopy class. Of L. Okay, so this cooked up an invariant of L, and this, so if you have L and you look at the set of all other L's, so you start with L, and then you deform L by an Hamiltonian isotopy, then this group G or G star, this group is an invariant attached to the isotopy class, the Hamiltonian isotopy class of L. Okay, so perfect. So just an example, a very simple example. So a very simple example is the use of Lin Yao. So you start with the standard torus. The standard two torus, say. Two torus T2, which is equal to S1A times S1A inside R4. So it's simply the product of two circles of area A, each one of area A. This gives you a two torus T2 of AA. And so if you take this two torus, then the monodromy group, then G is equal to Z2, and which is obtained by extending to U2 the started the rotation. Rotation by pi over 2 in R2. Okay, so what Yao Meilin Yao proved is that of course, this is obvious that G contains this element. So what you do is just you permute the two factors. Because the areas are the same, it's possible to permute the two factors by an Hamiltonian isotopy. Actually, the Hamiltonian isotopy is simply the isotopy in U2 that lifts the isotopy which is given by the rotation by pi over 2 in R2. And so it is because it is in U2, it is Hamiltonian, and because it sends T2 to itself, it is an element of G. So the proof in Meilin-Yao's paper is that there is nothing else. And there is so this is the first example. And there is a second example, which is a chicken of torus. Okay, so I will not describe this example. But it is another two torus in R4, which has the same area factors as the standard T2, but which is like Lagrange isotopic to T2, to the standard T2. Let's call this T standard. standard, the T2 standard. So it has the same area factor, the same areas as the T2 which is there, but it is, so it is like homogeneous isotopic to this standard T2, but it is not Hamiltonian isotopic to this T2. So in order to prove that it is not isotopic, it is not Hamiltonian isotopic to this standard T2, the way to prove that is to compute G in this case. So actually what we get is that G in this case is equal to Z2 or Z over 2Z also. So this is the same group as here. But if you look at G star, so the element in G star here, so you have, let's say, B here and A here. So you have two matrices, and it turns out that the special invariant of this matrix is easily seen to be different from these ones. So this proves that for the spectral invariant. Of the two G2. The two elements. Are different. So this shows that the two tutorials are not Hamiltonian isotopic. So you have, if I have time at the end of the talk, I will give a definition of this Chekhov story. Okay, perfect. So we have looked at two examples which are torus in R4. At the opposite end of the spectrum, so at the opposite end of the example, we have Lagrange sum manifold which inside the cotangent space of a manifold which are exact. So let me just recall that if V is a smooth manifold, T star of V is a cotangent of V. And then you have, the senilic form here is simply given by the differential of the Liouville form, and the Liouville form is given by summation of Pi dQi. And then, so this gives you a synthetic form on the cotangent of any smooth manifold, and L now, so L is exact if lambda restricted to L is exact. So you see that if L is Lagrangian, it means that omega restricted to L vanishes. So it means that d lambda vanishes on L. So therefore, lambda is a closed one form. And to say that it is exact means that it is not only closed, but it is also exact. So the conjecture is the following. So this is an old conjecture which is quite far, quite out of reach at the moment. So the conjecture says that an exact Lagrange sum manifold is Hamiltonian isotopic. So it's Hamiltonian isotopic to the zero section. Okay, so this conjecture has been proved. There is an homological the homological version of this conjecture has been proved under certain assumptions. Let me just write this in the homological version. Of this has been proved. And it's the following. So you take, this is a theorem due to Fukaya, Zeidel, and Smith. So it says the following. So this is the following, an exact. So let's start with the ambient manifold V, of course, T star of V. So if V is simply connected, then an exact Lagrangian manifold. Okay, then an exact Lagrange manifold with vanishing mass of class so let me just change the words here. Embedding. So Lagrange embedding with vanishing mass of class of a spin manifold L in T star of V must project to a map L to V, which is an isomorphism. In homology. Okay, so this is a relatively recent theorem by Foucaillas and Zadon and Smith. So if you start with, so all these hypotheses are actually needed in the proof, but they should be, we should be able in the future to get rid of them. So if V is simply connected, then an exact Lagrange embedding with vanishing mass of class. So I will not define what is the mass of class in this talk because it will not play a very important role. So with vanishing mass of class of a spin manifold. So a spin manifold means that the second Stiefel-Whitney class of L vanishes. So spin manifold L in T star of V must project to a map L to V, which is an isomorphic in homology. Okay, so if we take this for granted, so this theorem for granted, then you see that as soon as all the hypotheses are satisfied, because this map here, we have T star of V and L somewhere here. So what we know is that L projects to the map, a map here from L to V, it projects to a map which is an isomorphism in homology. And this means that the classes of L are locked. They are stuck in T star of V, the homology classes, and therefore if you have any Hamiltonian isotopy of L, then obviously this cannot interchange or permute the homology classes of L. So any Hamiltonian isotopy of L would preserve the homology classes. The way the homology classes of L embed in the homology classes of T star of V, and therefore the group G or G star actually G star. So the group G star has to be the identity because there's nothing else that can happen. This one doesn't work, eh? Very well. Yeah. You're right. Just have to be confident. You have to believe in it. Ah, yes, okay. Okay, so because of this theorem, you see that in this case, the homology classes of L injects. So the homology classes of L injects in the homology classes of T star of V, and therefore any Hamiltonian isotopy of L must preserve the homology classes of L. And therefore, the only possibility that we get as an, as as elements of this G-star. The only possibility is the identity. Okay, perfect. So now the main theorem of this talk is the following. So it's a theorem with Shangda Hu and Rémy Leclerc. And it says that so let L inside M instead of the manifold V be weakly exact. So weakly exact means that if you integrate omega on any two disks of M with values on so you take two disks of M with boundary on L, you integrate omega on this in R, so this is zero. Okay, so weakly exact, it's very obvious, it's very easy to see that if you have an exact Lagrangian submanifold, then it has to be weakly exact, and it is weakly exact. And therefore, this weakly exact, as the name suggests, the weakly exact condition generalizes the condition of exactness. And this is much more, so the difference is that exactness has a meaning only in the cotension spaces of smooth manifolds. Whereas the conditions of being weakly exact applies to any can be applied to any Lagrangian manifold inside any semi-specific manifold, and so it is a natural generalization, and the conclusion is that if you have such an exact Lagrangian manifold of M, then the groups of the G star is equal to the identity. So G star is trivial. So you see that these conditions are, so this is simply a condition at the level of the second homology group or homotopy group. So under a condition which has only to do with the second homology group, we derive a consequence on all homology groups of L inside M. So that's the power of the theorem. Under such a condition which has only something to do with the pi 2 of ML, we get a conclusion that has to do with all the homology groups of L. So a remark is that this is sharp. So the Hamiltonian identity is the condition of the identity being Hamiltonian is needed. Okay, so here G star here, recall that G star is the group of Hamiltonian identities. Of Hamiltonian monodromies of L, so you really need this isotopy to be Hamiltonian, because if it is not Hamiltonian, then there is a counterexample. So the condition of the isotopy being Hamiltonian is needed. Indeed, there exist Lagrange, so non-Hamiltonian Lagrange isotopy. Of submanifolds, of Lagrangian submanifolds. With monodromy different from this identity.
So here is the example. You take take the quotient. The quotient of t 2 times r. So this is x and y, this is z. So by the map, x, y, z goes to x plus y, y, z plus 1. So this is a den twist over so z becomes a circle, and because of this identification of z with z plus 1, so z becomes a circle, and so the map on the t2 factor is the monodromy map, the one-term monodromy map of t2 is the den twist. So now you take the form the x minus z times dy, which dz descends to a form non-self, descends to a form, a well-defined form on Q. So now let T be the constant of the F1, then omega. Because of the show. Okay, sure, of course. Now then omega, which is equal to dx minus z dy, which dz plus dy, which dt, so is a well-defined commutative form. On Q times this one. So moreover, T2 is a Lagrangian isotopic. So it's a Lagrangian submanifold. It's a Lagrangian submanifold. And so now the one term. So the one turn loop of T2's around the S1, around the Z coordinate. So is Lagrangian non-Hamiltonian. So is a Lagrangian non-Hamiltonian isotopy whose time one map is a den twist. Den twist of L. Okay, so this is an example. So you take this T2 torus inside Q times S1. So you turn around, so this T2 is Lagrangian for this symbiotic form. And so if you go around the Z coordinate, which is an S1 inside Q. So if you go around the Z coordinate, then if you just push these T2, then you have an Hamiltonian isotopy of Lagrange submanifold and come back to itself. It is not Hamiltonian, that's the point. And indeed, actually, in this case, the group G is not the identity, since it contains also the den twist. Okay, so yes, it is weak, exactly. Yeah. Simply because the pi 2 the pi two here. Yes, thank you. Here T two is with the exact. The pi two of T times S one T two is equal to zero. So that's okay, so it's trivially exact because simply there is no disk inside the manifold with boundary on T two. Okay, perfect. So we'd like to take the last 20 minutes, so or 25 minutes, to explain the proof of this theorem. So what I wish to do is to prove this, to give you an idea of the proof of this. Okay, so the proof, sketch of the proof. Okay, so the first thing to do is to review. So let's review. Two versions of quantum homology or Fleur homology. So two versions of Fleur homology. Of L. So the first one I will call L. So they are respectively the quantum homology. Of M of L and the Fleur homology. Okay, so take a manifold Lagrange manifold L inside M, and assume that the L is monotone. So this means that if you take the integration morphism of omega and the Matlab class on pi 2 of n r, these two are proportional. Okay, once again I don't want to define what is the Matlab class because I do not have time and it does not play a conceptual role important in the proof. Because in any case, so the theorem here is about weakly exact manifolds, and in this case there is simply no disk, positive disk in M with boundary of on L, and therefore the Matlab class is simply non-existent here. So we don't need any concept of Matlab class here. So this is why I do not want to take to define this. So, but if you know it, that's good. So we assume two conditions. So the first one is that these two classes, these two homomorphisms are proportional. And the second thing is that the minimal mass of class is at least two. So the minimal okay then six, so you have L inside M. And then fix a Riemannian metric rho, and then a morph function f defined on L with values in R. And then now fix a most complex function g on M, which is compatible with omega, with the sensitive form omega. and then deform the to look at so.
Okay, so look at the function. So the first define the complex as being the so the third complex in this case will be okay. So so now look at the so take the complex. So the quantum complex of C, the quantum complex as being by definition the space of critical points. So the work over Q, say, so the critical points, or maybe let's work over Z2. Okay, so there is no parameter orientations. So let's for the Z2 up on the critical point of F tensor with Z coverage for the ring, which is the polynomial, so the Laurent polynomials on the variables t and t minus. So here t will denote the minimal mass of class. And then the then now so this is Q. Now define the differential. The differential there is defined in the following way. You take so the of x is equal to u. So you take all possible configurations of the following type. You take x at critical point, and then you look you flow down using the flow. So you take the so you assume that the f rho are most male. Then you follow the flow the negative flow of f of the, so the negative flow of the negative gradient flow of f until you reach some monomorphic disk. So the boundary of some monomorphic disk. So this is a disk. So this is a disk inside M. So this is a disk inside M whose boundary is in L. So now you flow along this. This is geomorphic. And you flow again, always along the negative gradient flow line. You always follow the negative gradient flow lines of S. And then you arrive to some under disk. And finally, you flow to the point Y. So I should put points here. Okay, so you may have as many bubbles as you wish, but there is a finite number of these, and so this is a concatenation, if you wish, of two objects: the gradient flow lines, the negative gradient flow lines of S, and the boundaries of volumorphic disk. Of M with boundary on L. Okay, so now you define the boundary of X to be summation over Y and beta of the cardinality of this configuration space. So beta here is the total class. So this is the total class in pi 2 of ML. So beta belongs to pi 2 of ML is the total class. Of the bubble. And then you cushion out by this by the isometric group. So the natural isomorphism. And then take e to the beta times y. So this is the definition of the Fleur boundary operator. So now del square is equal to zero in this. So this is here where you need the assumptions on L. So this square is equal to zero, and then so you get an homology this gives an homology QH star of L, and which is shown to be independent. Independent of rho S. And check. Okay, so that's the just very quickly
what is the quantum homology of L. And so now, take the. Okay, so now I wish to define the relative Seidel morphism that I've introduced with Cheng Dahu some time ago. So it's a relative version of an homomorphism defined by Seidel in 2000. And so here is how you define it in this context. So you take you start with a disk D. So this is D2. This is disk, closed disk, and then you take the product of d2 times m, and so now I take a cut here, so I cut this, and what I do is I cut not only the base but also the fibration if you wish, so I cut in the fibration. And now I glue back by taking a point on the left-hand side and a point on the right-hand side of the cut. So I identify these with phi t. So phi t is, recall that we wish to prove the following theorem. You have the group, so we have the group Hamiltonian isomorphism, and inside this group we have the identity here. And this is phi t. So phi t is an Hamiltonian isomorphism. An Hamiltonian isotopy. And what we wish to show is that when we apply phi t to L, so we get an Hamiltonian isotopy, and the monodromy, the monodromy of the homological monodromy of phi 1 related to L must be the identity. So we have phi 1 here, and what we wish to show we have to show that phi 1 of L, phi 1 related to L from L to itself is the identity of the homology. Okay, perfect. So we have this path, phi t, that starts from the identity, so this is phi 0, and ends at phi 1. And then we wish to apply this path to L. Actually, we wish to apply the image, the endpoint of this path, phi 1, we wish to apply it to L and see that, so apply it to the homology of L and see that it is the identity. So what we do is the following. After this cut is made, after that this cut has been made, we identified one side with the other side using a phi t. So this is phi 0 and this is phi 1. And therefore, we get a new fibration that I call P. So P projects to D2. And on the boundary, what happens on the boundary is that phi 1 of L is equal to L. So it means that the L fiber is preserved. The L fiber is preserved when we use phi t as a clutching function, and at the endpoint here, on the right hand side point here, phi 1 of L is equal to L, which means that this defines a bundle, so an L bundle, and this L bundle is called, I call it N, and it's a bundle over S1. S1 is the boundary of D2. So at the boundary of D2, we have another fibration. which is a fibration over S1, whose fiber is L. Okay, now it's now you can endow this total space P with a symmetric form and an almost complex structure J, which is such that J is such that it's restricted to each fiber to an almost complex structure on each fiber. So omega is a symmetric form that also extends the symmetric form on each fiber. J is an almost complex structure that restricts to each fiber to an almost complex structure. And so we have N here. And now now there is a map. So I'll take a map. So here, I take this fiber here, and I take the other fiber at the opposite points here. And now what I wish to do is to take a point X to flow in the fiber. Oh, so this is X in L. So now I flow along in L to some disk. And then I flow, finally I flow in L, and still I reach some holomorphic section. So until I hit some holomorphic section here, and for the capital J, structure, and then this section, because it is a section, it has to also I look at J sections, so J sections are in the class of P N. So this section, so these are the J holomorphic sections in P with boundary on N. So because it has boundary on N, it has to hit here L. So this is L, let's say, I'll call it the fiber here at being L0, and this is L1. So I hit the same section here, the fiber L at the point, at the opposite point on the boundary, and then therefore I can simply flow here, flow using also the same data on until I reach the point Y. So this is the configuration space that I look for. So I repeat, I start with X in L0. I just flow inside L until I hit a J holomorphic. So this is a J holomorphic inside M. So this is a disk inside the fiber with on the M fiber with boundary on L. And then I continue like this until I hit a J holomorphic section in P N. And at this point, this section hits the fiber L at the opposite point on the disk at some point. And I flow from this point to a point Y by a sequence of negative gradient flow lines and holomorphic disk in ML. So in M1, L1. Okay, perfect. So these disks here are in the fiber, while this capital J section is in, of course, in P. Okay, perfect. So now this defines these moduli spaces. Define a map from the quantum homology of L0 to the quantum homology of L1. And this map is defined in the following way. Capital phi of x is equal to the summation over y and beta of the Komov-Witten invariant inside Pn of x, y, beta, h beta times y, So for each y, and so beta here is the class. So in order to define this, I need actually to choose some section class. So I choose some section class here. And now once I have chosen this section class, this is in the glass, the section class sigma 0 plus beta. Okay, so this is exactly the moduli space that I just talked about. And beta is the total, beta here belongs to, so y belongs to the critical points of S, and beta belongs to the pi 2 of ML. Okay, so in our case, the manifold L is weakly exact. So actually, this means that this is actually equal to summation. So being weakly exact means that there is no pi 2 of ML. So it means that this is the summation of Ground Fulton invariant of Pn of x, y. Okay, so the section class is well defined also. There's a unique section class in the case where the pi 2 of ML is equal to 0. Okay, so this is the map. And so now let's look at this map. So the goal is to prove that this map phi sigma 0 is an isomorphism. Okay, so indeed, so this is enough to prove our theorem, because what will happen? That's the following. So let's see this. Okay, so we have. Let's look at the Wang exact sequence of n. So we have L inside n to S1. So the Wang exact sequence is the following. So we take H star of n to by intersection to H star minus 1 of L. By now we have to map G star minus the identity. So G is equal to psi 1 minus the identity. So psi 1, let's say psi 1 star minus the identity to H star. So is it yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So minus the identity, so to H star of minus 1 of L to I star. H minus 1. Okay, so we wish to prove that the monodromy here, so the phi one star. So we wish to prove that this monodromy from the H star minus 1 of L. So let's put star plus 1 here. Okay, so we wish to prove that this map here is an isomorphism. Sorry, we wish to prove that phi 1 star is the identity. And so this means that we have to prove that phi 1 star minus the identity is equal to 0. And so this is the same as proving that I star is injective. Okay, so we need to prove. That I star is injective. Oh, I have not defined I. I is just the inclusion of L. So this is inside N, sorry. Thank you. It's inside N. So I, or maybe I should maybe call it iota from L to N is just the injection. So we need to prove that I star is injective, and this is done in the following way. If we know that this map is an isomorphism, then you see that it means that suppose that f is a morph, is a perfect morph function. So suppose just to make the argument easier, suppose that f is a perfect morph function. So in this case, the map phi. So in this case, the critical points of f can be identified with the homology classes of L. So it means that phi sigma phi capital phi sigma zero of a class alpha. So phi capital phi sigma zero of alpha is equal to summation of Gramov-Witten invariant of alpha. Maybe not alpha. I'll use A. So it means that the summation is. So it means that the summation is. So it means that what you have actually here, what you have is the. You take. So in this case, you just take the class alpha. The class A in L0, and then you just. So this is a class in the fiber in L, and this class will simply intersect a fiber of geomorphic section, and here. This section here will intersect the corresponding class B. So if you have because in the case of a morph function you can identify the critical points with homology classes of L. So this moduli space here G of this moduli space of Gramov-Witten invariant in Pn. So this Gramov-Witten invariant can be just seen as a class A in L0 that hits a geomorphic section, and this geomorphic section also hits a class B in L1. So by definition, in this case, in the case of a perfect morph function, the capital phi of sigma zero applied to A is equal to this, and then you see that it's not A and B actually that applies here because this is a Gramov-Witten invariant in Pn. So it is not exactly AB, but it is iota of A. Iota of A, iota of B. B. So this means that actually, so this is the capital point actually. This is actually very important, the fact that it is iota of A. So what you have is you take this class A and B, and this homology classes A and B, instead of looking at these classes as classes sitting in L0, you look at them as classes sitting in N. This is exactly what the Gramov-Witten invariant here computes. You take the classes seen in N, and this class seen in N, and then you compute the Gramov-Witten invariant. But because this is an isomorphism, so isomorphism implies that for all A, there exists a B, such that this Gramov-Witten invariant is non-zero. Okay, so this is simply the fact that it is an isomorphism, and then you see that if A is not zero, so for all A different from zero, there is a class B such that this is not different from zero. So it means that as soon as A is not zero, then iota of A cannot be zero either. So then this is the conclusion. This is exactly what I wanted to have. I'm going to finish in 1 minute. So. So this means that A is equal to different from zero implies that iota of A is different from zero. So this means that iota is imaginary. And this is the end of the proof, modulo the fact that we still have to prove that this is an isomorphism. I don't have time to show that, but the point is that there is another version of this. There is another version which is less geometric and more analytic. There's another version of this morphism phi of sigma zero, and this and in this one is when we see phi phi sigma zero in this other version will have to do with the another definition of the quantum the quantum complex. Actually, it will have to. This other definition of the quantum complex is the Fleur complex. So if we if I had more so 5 minutes more, I would define what is this, the usual Fleur complex of L, and then I could define on this usual the definition of L, I could define what is the equivalent version of capital phi on this other version. And on this other version, it's perfectly clear that the map capital phi sigma zero is an isomorphism because it is an isomorphism directly on the complexes. And then the last step is to show that these two capital phi, these two definitions of the capital phi are equivalent. And so this shows that this capital phi sigma zero defined in a geometric way is also an isomorphism. Okay, so I'll stop here.